Actually, the first three verses of that chapter are a continuation or the conclusion of chapter 7. The chapter should not have ended there. It should have been dropped down to verse 4. I think I read that last time. So I'm going to start with verse 4. Now, Jeremiah is now introducing another of his sermons. I think what we've been studying is a series of sermons that he preached, or the condensation of them, over the years. Remember, he preached for 40 years before Jerusalem was destroyed. So during that time, he was constantly warning them, trying to turn them back to God, telling them how terrible it was going to be. Now then, in this lesson, why, you can hear the horses tramping on the way. They're on the way now. Babylon's on its way. So this will be down somewhere quite late. Why, moreover, thou shalt say unto them, thus saith Jehovah, shall men fall and not rise up again? Shall one turn away and not return? And if a man falls, he gets up. What? If a man has turned away, out of the proper road, he'll turn back. Now, they haven't listened to Jeremiah. They haven't turned back. They haven't picked themselves up. They're in a fallen state. And what he's trying to do now, one last effort, this and the next summer or two, be a final effort to try to get them back on the right path. Why then is this people of Jerusalem slidden back by perpetual backsliding? They keep on backsliding. They will not listen to him. They will not listen to God and turn back to him. They hold fast deceit. They refuse to return. Now, I hearkened and heard, but they spake not aright. No man repented him of his wickedness, saying, "We have done. What have I done? What have I done?" Everyone turneth to his course as a horse that rusheth headlong in the battle. Here's a horse, and Job has a beautiful eulogy to the horse in battle. He rushes into the battle, fearless in it. So he just rushes right on into it, or he may be killed. All right, now the people are rushing headlong into destruction, but do not heed and turn back. They're acting like the horse in a battle that pays no attention to what's happening. All right, now he moves on to say here, none of them repents and turn back. Now, he uses four birds here, migratory birds, that know when to come back, when to leave and when to return in the spring, or whenever they return, back to their former nest, their former habitation. And only uses four of them. Yea, the stork in the heavens knoweth her appointed times. And they say the stork is very solicitous of her young. And the stork always comes back to the same place, generally built in the same location. And the turtle dove and the swallow and the crane observe the time of their coming. All of these birds that leave in the wintertime, come back in the spring, they know when to come back. My people haven't got as much sense as these birds have. They've left God and don't know when to come back. Don't know to come back. Refuse to come back. So usually those creatures of nature that do not have the intelligence that man has, only instinct, but they act according to it. Man doesn't act according to his intelligence here. Right? How do you say we are wise and the law of Jehovah is with us? But behold, the false pen of the scribes hath wrought folly. Now, whoever those scribes may have been, they may have been the scribes of the king, or they may have been the scribes of the religious leaders, but they led the people astray. Well, of course, we've had that. We had the Book of Mormon. We have the Jehovah's Witnesses. All of these were their writings, the denominational writings, and even some scribes among brethren. They write the wrong things there. And people listen to that instead of listening to what God said. This is the point that the prophet is making. But behold, the false pen of the scribes have wrought falsely. The wise men are put to shame. They are dismayed and taken. Lo, they have rejected the word of Jehovah, and what manner of wisdom is in them? Can a man really be a wise person and reject God? I don't think so. I think that man's a fool. The Bible says a fool. The fool said in his heart, there is no God. The fool is not a wise man. Now, a man can be wise with regard to science. He can be wise with regard to astrology, astronomy, whatever it might be. But if that man, and in mechanics and creative ability, but if that man isn't wise in the ways of God, he still is not a wise man. I say that the man who understands and knows his Bible and lives according to it is wiser than all the PhDs and all the rest of the alphabet in the world today who reject God. This man is a wise man. That'll take something to think about. Moves on now. How do these men are put to shame? How can they be wise when there's no real wisdom in them? Therefore I give their wives unto others, and their fields to them that shall possess them. For everyone from the least even unto the greatest is given to covetousness, from the prophet even unto the priest, everyone dealeth falsely. So these individuals, excuse me just a minute, these covetous individuals who are dealing unwisely, God will take what they coveted here, they have to give their wives. They've coveted other men's wives, God's going to give their wives somebody else. They've coveted lands, they've coveted houses, now that God's going to give that to somebody else. So that which they coveted is going to be given to others, given to the enemy that comes in. This is his point that he's making here. All right, now he said, I'll give that field, you've coveted fields, I'm going to give them to others there. Everyone dealeth falsely. And they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. We had that back in 6:14, that same statement. Jeremiah preaches the same thing, makes the same warning over and over to these people, but they don't hear it. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not ashamed, neither could they blush. And we've reached the same point in this country today. People are doing some shameful things, but they've gone so far they can't blush. They're not ashamed of it. They don't blush at it. And that's what they're doing back there. It's so interesting to me to study the prophets and to see how history repeats itself over and over again. This nation rises, prospers, and falls. Another one does the same thing. Therefore shall they fall among them that fall. In the time of their visitation, they shall be cast down, saith Jehovah. Visitation will be when God visits them with a judgment, bring another nation in to take them, to conquer them, and to destroy them, overthrow them. Right? God's in control, always has been, always will be, still ruling. Right? Now he goes on to say, I will utterly consume them, saith Jehovah. There shall be no grapes on the vine, nor figs on the fig tree, and the leaf shall fade, and the things that I have given them shall pass away from them. All the prosperity that God has given them, after a while, will pass from them. Another nation will take over, and they'll try to raise up something there. But why can't we learn from that? Well, I pointed out, you remember in studying the four Gospels, that Jesus selected the 12 apostles. They were very slow to learn. He would teach them the same thing over and over, and they still never seemed to learn. God had done the same thing with nations. He taught them over and over that which makes them continue. All right? But when they reach a point of destruction, it destroys them. But man is slow to learn that. It looks to me like history ought to be one of the best teachers who have second to the Bible, but we don't listen to it much. But we should, And that's one thing I have learned, that reading the prophets, the Old Testament, has helped me to read the newspaper, helped me to read the radio and the television news. You listen to it, you can see where we're going, what's happening. Go back there in history, in the history of the prophets, and we see this thing happening back there and the consequence of it. I think the best commentator or commentary on our modern news is the Old Testament. I think you'll find these prophets to be the best commentators, news commentators you'll find. These on the television, they'll tell you what's happening. These are the prophets tell you what's going to happen as a result of that. Pretty good commentators. All right, move on. All right, they're not able to blush, so God utterly consumed them. All right, so now hear what they're saying now. They've been nothing then. And so they said, why do we sit still? Assemble yourselves, and let us enter into the fortified cities, and let us be silent there, or the footnote says, perish there. Well, that'll be silence, all right. For Jehovah our God hath put us to silence, and given us water of gall to drink, because we have sinned against Jehovah. Now, instead of repenting and turning back to God, they said, why don't we sit here and perish out here? Let's go into the fortified cities. Perish there. There was really no need to perish at all. If they'd humbled themselves and turned to God, it was still not too late. That's why Jeremiah is still preaching. It's never too late until the enemy has come and we're suffering the consequence of too late then. There's always a point of no return. And the Jews were reaching that three times already last Sunday morning. Three times God said, don't pray for this people. Why? The point of no return has come. Too late now. That's why I don't believe in deathbed repentance. I think when you come to the deathbed, it's too late then for an individual who has known the truth, heard the truth, learned it, and won't do the truth. So it's too late then. That time comes. Just like John said, a certain individual, 1 John 5, don't pray for them. Don't pray for certain individuals there. So there comes a time beyond which you can pray for an individual or a nation or a society, whatever it may be. I don't always know when that point of no return has come. We may not know it, but it comes eventually. And God will not hear. These are serious lessons, solemn lessons, lessons I think our nation needs to listen to today. Need to hear it. They need to know it. But they don't. We don't have these prophets crying out to them. And I don't know that the preachers are crying out to them too much. They're trying to make everybody feel good. The philosophy of religion today is make folks feel good. Make them happy. They come, well, send them away feeling good and happy. Well, that's not the New Testament or Old Testament method either. Send them away conscious of sin and God's will and what they must do to escape the judgment and the consequence. Alright. He moves on from that. And notice what he says here. And God's given them the bread of mourning to eat and the gall of bitterness to drink. We looked for peace, but no good came. And for a time of healing, and behold, dismay. The snorting of the horses is heard from Dan. At the sound of the neighing of his horse strong ones, the whole land trembleth, for they are come and have devoured the land and all that is in it, the city and those that dwell therein. All right, now Dan was the farthest town north. All right, now they're already there, so you see they're on their way. And they're coming and getting nearer every day. So they're saying, why should we sit here? Let's get in the cities and be saved. No, why don't you repent and turn to God and let him save you? And that time will come to us someday, come to this nation someday. Bombs will be a-busting. Folks will be wondering, well, why did God let this happen? Why did he send this? Well, he's trying to warn us now, trying to tell us now. And we see the trumpet sounding. I said that last Sunday. That's what the trumpets were in Revelation, and the seven trumpets. Trumpets back here were sounding. They were warnings. People weren't heeding them. for the trumpets are sounding today. We ought to be giving heed to them. I'm not a pessimist. And as I'm going to say, preach my sermon this morning, I had a letter from a dear friend of mine, sister back in Tennessee. That's almost to the East Coast. And I talked to a friend of mine out in California on the West Coast. Both of them said, I'm more concerned about our nation today than I've ever been. I'm concerned about what's happening. Well, I am too. But no use to get all upset about it. Let's try to get people to repent and turn to God. If not, then put our faith in God, because the judgment will be from Him. He'll take care of it. It's God's judgment. So I'm concerned, but I want to talk about things that endure, things that continue, things that there are things that are not going to be moved. Turn to these. God, we talked last Sunday morning, God, the foundation of God's throne, Jesus Christ, are unchangeable. This morning I want to talk about the unchangeable kingdom, the unchangeable word, and an unchangeable principle. We need to listen to these, take our refuge in them, and not worry about what happens to this world, because it's going to go the way of all the rest of them. This nation's going to go the way of all the rest of them, because they've rejected God. They're not listening. They're not turning to Him. They're not concerned about what He says. Outlaw God. Get Him out of our thinking. Get Him out of the thinking of our children. Humanism. Teach them all that. Give them condoms when they get 8 or 10 years old, begin to meet. Teach them all that sort of thing. And then not suffer the consequence of it. Oh, we're crazy. Said the crazy old people were back then. All right, let's move on a little farther. Now he goes on to say here, they devoured the land and all that is in it, the city and these that dwell therein. So it's the Babylonians were on their way, as far as Dan, and on their way down south now to Jerusalem, where he was preaching. For behold, I will send serpents, adders among you, which will not be charmed, and they shall bite you, saith Jehovah. Now, not literal snakes. The people I'm going to send among you are people that are going to take you, and they will bite you, poison you, and kill you. That's what I'm going to do. They won't be charmed. That's the point. I'm going to send a bunch of snakes among you. You try to talk to them all you want to, but they're going to take the city and go and destroy it. Well, that's the thought there. Oh, now then the prophet, here's his lamentation. The prophet's lament here. Oh, that I could comfort myself against Solomon. My heart is faint within me. Behold, the voice of the cry of the daughter of my people from a land that is very far off. A very far off. Jehovah is not a king in her. Here's what the prophet hears by faith in what he's preaching. He can hear the voice of the daughter of Zion, the people of God, in a far land. When they get there, they're not there yet. No, he's telling them what he hears, what's going to come. That's what he means by that. He'll hear them crying, well, isn't God in Zion? Where is God? Why hasn't he done something about it? Why has he let us be over here? And you're going to hear Christians talking like that, who live unholy, ungodly lives. Then suddenly come on, why did God let this happen to us? Why should it happen to this country? Why should these things come to us? Well, they come as a judgment of God, because we turned Him down. Always have, always will. Notice further, is not Jehovah in her? Why have they provoked me to anger, says God, provoked me to anger with their graven images and with fallen vanities? Now, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. The time has come now for the judgment. We're not saved. For the hurt of the daughter of my people am I hurt. I mourn. Dismay has taken hold of me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then is not the health of the daughter of my people recovered? So, ask this question. Now, there was a tree there that produced a resin that would make into a balm, a medicinal help there. Now, and so the question, and that was in Gilead, to the north and a little east of Galilee. Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, northeast. These trees produce that. Now, so the question is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Is there not one there to heal us in this condition here? Yes, of course, Jehovah was the physician. Jehovah's way was the balm. But they rejected that. So the prophet here now is lamenting the fact that his people from a far country are going to cry, isn't God in Zion? Isn't there any balm there? Man or physician there to heal us, to bring us back home again? Yes, it was there all the time. That led me to think about next time I'll preach on the great physician. The great physician is always near. There's no balm in Gilead, no physician, yes. Now, in our land today, there's a balm in Gilead. There's a physician there. The physician is Jesus Christ, and the balm is the gospel. But the men got to take the medicine. If you don't take the medicine, it won't do any good. I went to a doctor's last week, and he gave him three different kind of pills there to take. Thought it helped my hearing and helped my walking, maybe. So I'm taking them. I could leave them in the bottle there, but that wouldn't do any bit of good. We can leave God and the gospel out, not going to save us. The bomb's in Gilead, good people. And a physician is there. Let's talk about that next Sunday. I think that'd make a good lesson. We're going to talk about that next Sunday. Well, we'll move on now. Now he goes on to say, the prophet continued, "Oh, that my head were waters, and mine eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people." Now sometimes Jeremiah called the weeping prophet that's a misnomer. He was a stern a fellow with a lot of love for his people and concern for them. He didn't go around spending his time crying all the time. He preached to them, and when he threw them in the dungeon, he trusted in God there. But he says, "Oh, that my head were waters and my eyes were fountains there, for springs, that I might weep for them." But it wouldn't do any good, of course. But they, oh, it would, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people. I don't think he did that, but he could do it. That's the way he thought about it. Oh, that I had in the wilderness a lodging place of wayfaring men, that I might leave my people and go from them, for they are all adulterers, an assembly of treacherous men. David, on the battlements of Jerusalem, looked over toward the south there, where he'd spent his young, carefree days. I say carefree, but youthful days, fighting, all that, leading a group of men. And so, oh, that I had wings of a dove, that I'd flee into the wilderness and find rest. Jeremiah says, oh, that I had a little lodging place out in the desert somewhere, away from people, that I might go there and get away from all this. I think every preacher has felt that way at some time in life. When he's preaching and working, not seeming to get anywhere, I've felt that way a few times in life. And just think, oh, I wish I had a place out in the wilderness so I could get take the wings of a dove and get away from it all. But you can't do that. Preacher can't do that. Elders can't do that. We can't do that. There ain't any place to flee. The thing to do is not to go, move out and be a hermit away from people, but to stay among the people and be the light of the world, the salt of the earth, the leavening influence. Oh, that's what the Christian is, don't you see? Well, these lights here, giving light in here, but it wouldn't be worth a dime if I had all them stuff over this room here. Wouldn't be any good to us out here. You'd save my light, maybe, but it wouldn't be doing any good. Have to be out here. So the Christian has to be among the people and let his light shine, let his salt give savor, let his leaven influence the people about him. This is what we're supposed to be doing. I know last time we think we'd rather be off by ourselves, and I had. I'd rather do that. But back, I'm talking about now when I was younger, when I was preaching and teaching all the time, those times would come. But let's move on. They said, oh, that I had that. I'd like to get away from it. And they bend that tongue as it were their bow for falsehood. That is, a tongue is a bowhead to shoot the arrows of falsehood. And they are adulterers. Look at the kind of people they were. And they are grown strong in the land, but not for truth. And that's the kind of folks who are growing strong in this country today, but not for truth. What is truth? Well, truth is relative, they tell us. What was truth back yonder for some people is no longer truth for us today. So what's truth for us today won't be maybe for the people next week. That's crazy. Truth is just as unbendable as God is, just as unchangeable. For the truth, for they proceed from evil to evil, and the know not me, saith Jehovah. Take ye heed, every one, of his neighbor, and trust ye not in any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will go about with slander. Living in a time back there when you couldn't believe what anybody said. You couldn't trust anybody to tell the truth, to slander you, take what you said and twist it, shoot the arrows of falsehood. A terrible time. Well, not a whole lot different today. Maybe we're not as severe as they were then. Maybe we are. Maybe in God's sight we're getting about the same there. Who can you trust today? Go out and do business with a person you can. Can you really trust what he says and trust him to do what the thing is? No, not very well you can. And you buy something with an on it that says this or that. Well, can I really trust that to be true? We don't know, do we? All right? And then we'll forget when President Kennedy was caught in a falsehood, the State Department lied on something, and when he got caught, he said, well, when it's profitable for the country, for the state to lie, why, it is right to lie. I've never believed anything that come out of the State Department since. I don't disbelieve it. I don't necessarily believe it. Is it so? Isn't it so? Who knows? Who knows? When a politician speaks, he opens his mouth, all you know is he's speaking. But you don't know what he's speaking. Now, there's some good ones. Don't misunderstand me. I'm sure there's some good men. But who are they? There's many of the other kind. Who do you know to trust? And when you live in a society like that, something has got to give. God's going to give us a pretty good spanking. He's going to take us to the woodshed one of these days, and as we have sown, so shall we reap. Well, all right. Let's not be pessimistic. I'm going to talk this morning on the other side of this thing. Okay, we have two lessons today. This one here that warns, and another one that exhorts. All right, we move on. Trust you not in any brother, nor your neighbor. For they will deceive every one his neighbor, and will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies. They weary themselves to commit iniquity. Wear themselves out doing what's wrong. Their habitation is in the midst of deceit through... through deceit they refuse to know me, said Jehovah. Alright, now that's your condition back there. That's a terrible charge to bring against a people. And I think we could bring some pretty serious charges against our country today. People are more concerned than they ever have been about the future of it because of the wickedness of it. That's the thing. Not because of economic depression, but the wickedness of the people is such that people are deeply concerned about it. Right now then, therefore. Now when you find a therefore, what do you look for? The consequence of what you've been reading. Now we've been reading about the moral and spiritual, social condition of the people. Now here's your therefore. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah of hosts, behold, I will melt them and try them. For how else should I do? Because of the daughter of my people. I'll melt them. That is, I'll burn them up. My anger as a fire will consume them. How else can I treat them? Well, now you stop and think about it. When people totally reject God, now of course we haven't totally rejected them, there's still a remnant here. God has already destroyed it. It's still the remnant. There's a remnant here that's still the salt of the earth and the light of the world. It's still there. But what we're seeing is that's becoming, losing its savor, becoming less and less. Now then, when it becomes just like these people back yonder, what else can God do except execute his righteous judgment against that people? There's nothing else he can do and be God. Always remember the two sides, God's other side. One side is love, mercy, long-suffering, all of that. The other side is what? Wrath, anger, and judgment. So you've got the two sides, and that's what Nahum talked about there in the first few verses. That points out God's other side, two sides. All right? Their tongue is a deadly arrow. It speaketh deceit. One speaketh peaceably to his neighbor with his mouth, but in his heart he layeth wait for him. Says one thing, does another. Talks peaceably, but now in his heart he's planning to waylay him. Shall I not visit them for these things, saith Jehovah? Shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? All right, now that was his nation, I know that. Now I know that the United States is not in the same relation to God that Jews were. But God says here, but notice what he says here then. Avenge on such a nation as this. So I'm making it what kind of, which nation it is. If it does these things, God says, shall I not be avenged on a nation such as this? And so what way it'll come, I have no idea. But I do know that eventually one of two things has to happen. There's got to be a turning back to God on the part of the people, or over the precipice of destruction, one or the other. Always been that way. God doesn't change. That was what we said last Sunday morning. God doesn't change. So how he acted in one situation at one time, I can expect him to act in a similar way next time. Well, let's hasten on. I wanted to finish the chapter, good. For it said, the mountains will take up a weeping and wailing, and for the pastures of the wilderness, a lamentation, because they are burned up, so that none passeth through, neither can men hear the voice of the cattle, and no longer there. Both the birds of the heavens and the beasts are fled. They are gone. God is speaking here metaphorically, I think. Here the mountains, which have offered false sacrifices to God, false God, and all that, that's all going to be overrun by foreigners who will practice the scorched earth policy, leaving nothing there. And then everything will be driven out. It's literally what's going to happen, all right, in this. And I will make Jerusalem heaps, a dwelling place of jackals, and I will make the cities of Judah a desolation without inhabitant. Man, that's a terrible judgment. But that's what happened. The Babylonians got through. Jerusalem was a heap of rubble. And the little towns that they took outside, where they destroyed them, carried the people in captivity. Had a terrible judgment. Who is the wise man that may understand this? And who is he to whom the mouth of Jehovah has spoken, that he may declare it? Wherefore the land perished and burned up like a wilderness, so that none passeth through? And Jehovah said, because they have forsaken my law, which I set before them, and have not obeyed my voice, neither walked therein. There are three things there. First of all, they have forsaken my law, and have set before them, they have obeyed not my voice, they have not walked, as lived in the way that I taught them. So this is why the judgment's coming. All right, now if that happened in a literal way, what's going to happen in the final judgment? When they're cast in the outer darkness, the eternal fire, the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. People read that and sort of laugh at it and go on. These people did the same thing back yonder. So when Nebuchadnezzar got through with them, there wasn't anything to laugh about. When God's judgment gets through in the final judgment, won't be anything to laugh about then either. It'll all be over. But have walked after the stubbornness of their own heart, and after the Balaam, the false gods, which their fathers taught them. Therefore thus saith Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will feed them, even this people, with wormwood, and give them water of gall to drink. Wormwood was a bitter wood there, and left them. And that's what he's going to give them there. To eat and give them gall to drink. Water of gall to drink. That's a bitter diet, isn't it? It's a bitter diet. No sugar to sprinkle on it either. Honey to mix with it. So that's a bitter diet that you're going to have. I will scatter them also among the nations whom neither they nor their fathers have known. And I will send the sword after them till I have consumed them. at that particular generation. Now, he didn't consume all of it. He said, I'll never bring them to a full end. Jeremiah's already said that three times. Back in our early part of it, I'm going to bring it to a full end. He's going to say it twice more. But he never brought them to a full end. But that generation that had acted like that, that's the one he destroyed. Brought them to a full end. But not all the people. So others that lived to come back. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider you, ye, and call for the mourning women, that they may come, and send for the skillful women, they may come, and let them make haste, and take up a wailing for us, that our eyes may run down with tears, and our eyelids gush out with waters. Now, it seemed like in that day, that, and you get that idea in the New Testament, that at funerals they would hire mourners. All right, now send now to get these mourners together to mourn the lot of the nation. We're going to need them. All right, and I lead a grace for the water. For a voice of wailing is heard out of Zion. How are we ruined? We are greatly confounded because we have forsaken the land, because they have cast down our dwellings. Yet hear the word of Jehovah, O ye women, and let your ear receive the word of his mouth, and teach your daughters wailing, and everyone her neighbor lamentation. Oh, a teacher, for all of you are going to be in lamentation. All of you are going to be in wailing when your cities are destroyed. You've lost everything you have. You're carried away into captivity. Serve other people. For death has come up into our windows. It has entered into our palaces to cut off the children from without and the young men from the streets. Speak thus, saith Jehovah. The dead bodies of men shall fall as dung upon the open field, and as this handful after the harvestmen, and none shall gather them. All right, so this is what we look for. Death entering into every house. I want to finish this paragraph. Thus saith Jehovah, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth, glorieth in this, that he hath understanding, and knoweth me, that I am Jehovah, who exerciseth loving kindness, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith Jehovah. All right, again. Don't glory in our strength. This nation glories in its military strength and all that. But let's glory in what? Glory in that we know Jehovah. And we serve him. He's our God. He'll deliver us. That's our glory. That's our glory today, was there. The last thought. Behold, the day is come, said Jehovah, and I will punish all them that are circumcised in their uncircumcision. That they were circumcised in flesh, uncircumcised in heart. Egypt and Judah and Edom and the children of Ammon and Moab and all that have the corners of their hair cut off, that dwell in the wilderness, for all the nations are uncircumcised, and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised in heart. We talked about that a few Sundays ago. Uncircumcised in lip, uncircumcised in heart, uncircumcised in speech, and so on there. But they were circumcised in flesh, but that didn't save them, but not in heart. I hope that this lesson will impress itself upon all of us. I'm sure Jeremiah got no pleasure out of preaching this. He didn't. It caused him to weep. I don't get any pleasure out of studying it or teaching it. But it's truth. God's the same yesterday and always. And these things that came on them are going to come on us. So we need to know about it before the time comes. And not be surprised at it. Anything you want to ask, add to what I've said. Well, if not, we'll stop right there and start there next time to the next chapter. All right, class is excused.